The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The sexual revolution didn't deliver on any of its promises. It's a conversation that people need to have, finally.
Pope Paul VI, out of this deep love for humanity, he issued this warning to us all.
He predicted all the social pathologies that have, in fact, come out of the sexual revolution.
In 2,000 years of the Church's history, there's not a single official document which has been hated, despised, rejected, and disobeyed by more Catholics than Humanae Vitae. That's how important it is.
I'm not sure how Paul VI could have been more right.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's so true. It was almost prophetic, visionary, prescient. It's pretty amazing, Paul VI and what he saw coming. I guess it was also logical too, right? You could definitely see what was looming. At the very beginning of October, I don't know if you followed any of this, the American Medical Association, the AMA, and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association, they wrote a letter. They sent it off to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, right? Can you imagine if he was on the Supreme Court right now? They said to him, again, you got the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Children's Hospital Association, and the American Medical Association, asking him to investigate and prosecute activists and journalists who reported this summer on hospitals performing irreversible gender surgeries on children. What are we, in Nazi Germany? Are we living in some fascist country? Are we under some sort of totalitarian regime? Really? You want to prosecute journalists who report on what these hospitals are doing? You know, the more information we have, the greater the freedom we have, I believe. I think more dialogue, not less, right? As Catholic News Agency reported, the Catholic Medical Association, they wrote an open letter to Garland telling him this. This is what they said, quote, "Expression of concern over the ability of youth to understand and consent to irreversible surgical interventions that result in loss of fertility and adult sexual function does not constitute harassment or intimidation," end of quote. But that's the kind of thing we're facing today, right? Persecution. This is a bloodless movement, but still it is persecution. It's taking place because those motivated, I believe, by this misplaced sexual desire, they want those who don't agree with them, those who oppose them, they want them silenced, right? At the very least. But we've also seen the case of Jack Phillips and Baronelle Stutzman, the individuals and small businesses. They want businesses to comply, even though the person says, hey, I'll recommend someone else or I'll do. No, not good enough. You have got to bow at our altar. You have got to comply. So we've also seen where the government wants, for instance, the Little Sisters of the Poor, right? The Little Sisters of the Poor, this was the most crazy of all the cases, or Hobby Lobby, you know, or even a Catholic hospital or healthcare provider, to do things that they cannot to do. I mean, Little Sisters of the Poor with contraceptives, that contraceptive mandate, that was silly. It was just the optics of that were just so wrong on every level. They would have been better off staying away from that. The Department of Health and Human Services has proposed rules that would force Catholic hospitals to do what those other hospitals are doing. Surgical, you know, mutilation on kids, on their perfectly healthy organs. And there's a lot of Catholic hospitals, a lot of Catholic physicians who say, no, I don't want anything to do with this. So what are you seeing? I'll boil it down. Helen Alvarez is going to be joining me. The sexual revolution, my friends, is now in a direct confrontation with the first provision of the First Amendment. You know what that is, right? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So how we as Catholics respond to this, I think, is crucial. And I just can't say either to the judges or to those pushing the agenda, well, it's Catholic doctrine and we can't change it. No, this really doesn't have anything to do. It really doesn't do anything, especially in the area of giving a genuine witness to the truth and the beauty of the faith. Helen Alvarez joins me today. She is a professor of law at the Antonin Scalia School at George Mason University, and she's been watching this very closely. She has a new book out. It's well worth the read. It's called Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Stick that in your spiritual library as well. I think you won't be disappointed. And you can get that from Catholic University of America Press. She joins me today. Great to have you back with me today. Good afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
I know, you know, well, this work is timely. I don't know how it's resonating with people. I mean, there seems to be a great deafness and blindness going on in the culture to what we're now seeing and hearing. Was there a certain inevitability to a legal confrontation between the forces, let's say the sexual revolution and the church? The situation with Catholic hospitals seems inevitable. I think we should have probably seen it coming, but how do you see it? How did you read the winds?
Yeah, it wasn't enough for those who support abortion, the sexual revolution generally, to say, you know, we want this for ourselves. It's like the old, you know, Lincoln-Douglas debate, you won't be happy until I say that slavery is good and that I support it. They wouldn't be happy until the whole system backed what they were saying. That's why they went to put abortion in the Constitution, for instance, right? Because they wanted everybody to have to say, yes, it's legal, or yes, it's good even. So this was inevitably coming for religious institutions because we're big, we're prevalent, we do the kinds of things that intersect with the sexual revolution. We provide health care, we provide education, we provide social services, we have insurance policies that cover our employees. They want to, you know, require them to cover same-sex couples. We have employees who are cohabiting or who want a policy that covers health care for abortion or transgender surgery. So it was inevitable, and we are some of the primary voices standing in the way of everybody saying, oh, this is good.
Yeah. So you know, how do we defend against this? And here's my thought. When a Catholic school or hospital or let's say some other charitable institution is sued, so often the defense is, oh, well, we're Catholic and, you know, these are, you know, the Catholic beliefs, these are our rules. You know, what's a more robust way for those institutions to be defending themselves? I think of Yeshiva University, where the judges said, well, you're not Catholic enough. Give me your thought on maybe a more eloquent or more robust way that we can defend ourselves. I think something we might have just lost Helen's signal. Helen, you with us? All right, we'll try to reconnect. I'm going to put her in queue, Maggie, if you could do that. We'll check. If you're just joining us, we're taking a look at religious freedom after the sexual revolution. And my guest today is Helen Alvarez. She wrote a book, and you might, if you, this kind of presses your buttons, if this resonates with you. It's called Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. And again, you can get that at Catholic University of America Press. And we're just breaking it all down. It's just the beginning. We're going to see much more of this. You know, we've seen the conflict that we've seen already between photographers and bakers and web designers. Now you've got surgeons in hospitals and Catholic institutions, Catholic hospitals, being asked to go ahead and to conduct procedures that, you know, go against the very tenets of their faith. And this is a big moment for us. You know, we've seen since Vatican II this kind of separation between so-called social justice Catholics and so-called traditional Catholics. You know, we see right now a need more than ever to be reunited. There's legal fallout, I think, from that separation. And it is a real problem that we as a culture are facing. And, you know, when the church is on the docket on cases related to, say, let's say sexual identity, or quite often the accuser will try to trot things out like sexual abuse scandal or claims that the church is obsessed with sex or stuck in the past with their views on sex. What's the best way for us to approach that? That's what we're breaking down for you right now. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll go ahead and continue our conversation with Helen Alvarez. Of course, you can join us too anytime. The number here is 888-914-9149. And just a quick programming note here for you too. Want to take a look at something else I think is critical for us to dive into right now. We take a look at the challenge with Catholic hospitals, right? We live in a very disturbing time where you have institutions like the DHS and other institutions, Department of Homeland Security, trying to curb speech. So we have institutions that are being forced to perform procedures and advance things that they're diametrically opposed to. And at the same time, we see an attack on speech. We'll break it all down for you on the other side. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
I want to break free.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Delighted to be here with you today. Thanks for joining me. I'm speaking this afternoon with Professor Helen Alvarez, author of a new book called Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Hey, look, as Catholics, we have an obligation, I think, to transform the culture, to be witnesses to truth, and it might be difficult to stand up for those truths. You might actually lose your job, you know? You may be disinvited. I have a friend of mine who's a physician, and I was talking to him last night, and he recently has been let go from his position, and he thinks it's because he spoke truth to the powers to be about certain things. I don't want to get into details. I don't want to expose any more than that, but this is what happens. You know, this is what happens. But this is an inevitability. I think, you know, our First Amendment, where it says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion prohibiting the free exercise of, is coming into to a collision course with some of these issues that are now being demanded of Catholic hospitals and of others. It's good to have you back, Professor. Like, I want to pick it up on a couple things. One, you know, I was saying when you dropped off, you know, since Vatican II, this kind of separation between the so-called social justice Catholics that we have today and so-called traditional Catholics, obviously that shouldn't be the case. But in your view, has there been legal fallout due to the separation of those groups?
Yes, I certainly think that people respect Catholic and other religious groups' claims for religious freedom when they like what it is we want our religious freedom for. And they can go along with what they denominate social justice, but have a lot more trouble with our stuff on sex, marriage, parenting. Yeah. And what I talk about in the book is that really the Good Samaritan ethic permeates all of those issues. There's no divide between social justice and the way we handle our families. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people in our families are those given to us, strewn across our path, and the first place where we have to show love. Many of us will be fortunate, right, to have the opportunity to love people in difficult social circumstances, poor, imprisoned. But every single person has the opportunity, in addition, to take care of the people given to them and their family. And they're both Good Samaritan kinds of love. And they both will love that has indelible effects, maybe more indelible in family love than anywhere else.
Right, that's well said. You know, when it comes to some of these hospital issues, abortions, the contraceptive mandates, the transgender surgeries, that's one thing. You know, one thing that has happened in the culture that I've seen since 2015, since the Obergefell decision where the Supreme Court redefined marriage, people have really come to accept, and it's just become, you know, polls have shown this, attitudes have really changed. We've lost our understanding of what marriage really is, what it has been for millennia, and what it's intended to be. And it's one of the key issues, I think, that we face in the culture today, because there's fallout from that. And I said this when that decision went down. I said, you know, you are going to see the bad fruit of this, and it's going to lead to a lot of other things. The separation of the definition of marriage from children, you know, brought on by contraception, we saw that in a powerful way, you know, with contraception, the fallout from the separation, you know, when it comes to marriage, we saw the fallout, you know, with that. As people wondering about marriage and children, they're even connected anymore. People, you know, marriage is no longer fundamental to having a family, you know. Is this, I don't know, something that we should be explaining? Not just, you know, to the families,
so
but I mean, this has got to get out there in the courts. Should we be in that area, you know, in the media? Should we be in the public square, so to speak, trying to educate people on really what we believe and why? Will that make a difference?
You know,
and is it even possible?
No, I think we should, because frankly, what we have to offer is so good for people. Whether you're talking about separating marriage from kids, whether it's through contraception, whether it's through abortion or same-sex marriage, what you're saying is that human love has no reference to tomorrow.
Right.
Children are the ultimate tomorrow. The idea that the love between two people should have a reference to the future, to tomorrow, to family, to love, to getting a text in the morning from someone, that all of these together, these issues, are really about, in our view as Catholics, the fact that we're made for a quality of love that points to forever, that points to permanent, that points to faithful, to radical commitment. And frankly, there's so much about this that we can say that doesn't involve, citing chapter and verse of Scripture. It's about the human heart wanting this kind of radical love that points to tomorrow. You take children out of even the concept of sexual love, then sexual love is really only about this minute. And we're just made for so much more than that, for such better quality love.
That's so true. I only have a few minutes. Let's grab a call or two for you, Professor. My guest today, Professor Helen Alvarez. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Check out her book. It's called Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Dee Dee's listening in Phoenix, Arizona. She's got a comment or at least a question for you. Hi, Dee Dee. Good afternoon.
Hi, doctor. I can't wait to read your book. I'm a product of that sexual revolution. So my question to you is, where were female Catholics or female Catholicism, where was it before the sexual revolution?
Mm-hmm.
What were we doing right?
Yeah, there's so much. That's a really big question. The idea that women were sensitive early on to the fact that sexual revolution was kind of a license for everybody to act like the sort of quintessential bad playboy guy, that was a question that was raised even at the very dawn of the sexual revolution. And the Catholic Church in Humanae Vitae, I mean, I came to believe that stuff later, like a lot of people too, recognized that women would be objectified if sex was completely separated from the fact that women could have children. That would be a physical uniting of the man and the woman. There was initial tremors about that, and then people set it aside because they bought the idea that somehow sex is the soul of human identity and we needed freedom to fashion our own individual identity. I think the fallout now is such that people's loneliness, the demise of marriage, women are at a 40-year, the highest gap ever between the number of children they want, which is almost 3, and the number of children they're having, which is like 1.7. I hope we're coming awake to this and that Catholic women will lead the way. That's my hope.
Well, Dee Dee,
thank you.
Thank you. That was a great
thank
question.
You.
Great call. All right. Well, I'm grateful for your time. If people want your book, by the way, I know Dee Dee wants to read it. What's the best way to get it? Is it simply Catholic University of America Press, or can you get it?
Yeah, it's available on all the major, book-selling online sources, Amazon and others, and so it's easy to get. And so, Catholic U Press has it. Amazon has it. I don't know if Barnes & Noble is still online, but they've all got it at this point.
Doctor, before I let you go, let me ask you just one fundamental question about the book. When I wrote my last book, there's always something that seems to stand out, or there's some revelation, or there's something you really want to get across. In your book, was there any surprises when you were writing it that you found, or
yes.
Finally, in the end, what did you hope people came away with when they're done digesting it?
Well, there's a surprise and a hope. The hope is that they really think that there is something beautiful about Catholic teaching on
Amen.
Sex, marriage, and parenting
Amen.
That they're willing to speak about. The realization was that Catholic love, Christian love, is a whole lot more radical than I realized, a whole lot more demanding, and I better get myself in shape a lot better.
You got it. Well, hey, I'm grateful for your writing. Keep up your good work, okay?
You
keep
Thank
it up.
You, you
I look
too.
Forward to our next conversation. Good to have you here.
That's Thank
Helen
you,
Alvarez, professor of law at the Antonin Scalia School of Law at George Mason University, author of that new book, Religious Freedom After the Sexual Revolution, A Catholic Guide. Check it out, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. And I think we need to be better informed, especially with so many of these moral threats in our day. And look, they're not going away. They're only going to increase. And you turn on your television news and look at what's being promoted, what's being advanced. Look at the co-opting of language and look at the agenda and the ideology that's being forced, not just on you, but at younger and younger and younger ages, now on our children. It really, to me, is quite frightening. So you can't give what you don't have. And I think, the more you know, the better you're going to be able to defend and persuade and ultimately be a witness for the truth. One other issue I want to get on, and Dr. Ann Cavoukian is going to be stopping by here. We'll talk to her. I always love her insight in this. Do you remember that disinformation board we had? Misinformation, disinformation, Scary Poppins, who was out there singing that song. Remember that? It was crazy. Misinformation, disinformation, right? Let's take those words. Again, I love words, right? Those are watchwords of the campaign this season. Have you been? Maybe you're tuned out of the politics. You're like, I'm so sick of it, Drew. I don't want to. Believe me, I get it. But we're being told that it's being spread in huge amounts on social media. You know, this misinformation and disinformation, right? The whole uproar over Elon Musk, you know, taking over Twitter. He bought Twitter, right? He's going to fire. The estimates are about 4,000 of their top of their employees. He's firing top executives. He's dissolving the board. He named himself as a sole board member, and then he's allowing users to kind of fact check the White House. That's going to be an interesting sight to see. So I think it's great. As I say, you know, we need more conversation, more dialogue, not less. You know, we can't censor and limit this information. You saw what happened with the algorithms during the past election, how they muted, right? Searches that if you were searching for a Republican candidate, what would happen versus a Democrat? If you did a search for Hunter Biden and his laptop, if you know, depending on what you're looking for and the way the news feeds came up and what you were being fed, big tech, they were feeding you what they wanted. And you talk about censorship, you know, misinformation. It's such a complex issue. What's more interesting, though, and this has not really been reported on in the mainstream media. That's why I want to talk to you about it. I'm always trying to maybe give you a little look at something you're not going to get somewhere else. And that's why I hope you tune into me on a regular basis. There is a story I've been following. And it's in regards to the revelation on ongoing collusion between the current administration and big tech, right? So do you remember earlier this year when the administration announced plans for that disinformation governance board? The Dems loved it. It was, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. You know, we've got to make sure you get the right information. The proposal received tons of criticism. Everyone is saying, hey, this is like the Ministry of Truth from George Orwell, right? From his novel, 1984. So what happened? The response was so overwhelming, the administration basically shelved the plan. Well, at least that's what they said they did. How true is that? Did they really shelve it? As I said, they got rid of Scary Poppins, right? But did they really shelve it? That's the big question. There's an investigative journalism website called Intercept. They came across documents showing that while the plans were publicly shelved, check this out, the administration is actually still doing it, and they're working with big tech to suppress your free speech. In fact, Meta, right? They own Facebook now, Instagram, they own that. They set up a separate portal for the administration to report what they determined were instances of disinformation so that Facebook or Instagram could flag them or take them down. I've always said I wish there were alternatives out there, right? And part of me hates social media. I got to be honest with you. It is wretched. And you can see this. I mean, here you got big government involved with big tech. That should give every American pause. You really should be concerned. The Department of Homeland Security is the one that's primarily responsible, you know, for this. And they're targeting everyone who puts information up. And let me just quote. It says here, quote, the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic and the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines, racial justice, U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. What a fiasco that was, right? And the nature of U.S. support of Ukraine. Those are the things that they're going to determine what you get fed. Isn't that an interesting list of things? Obviously, the poor performance in the withdrawal of Afghanistan is still stinging the president and his aides. But to come up with a list from vaccines to racial justice to Afghanistan to the war in Ukraine is something like I want to talk about. Dr. Ann Cavoukian joins me today. She's executive director of Global Privacy and Security by Design Center. She's been a regular here. And when it comes to privacy, when it comes to big tech, you can follow her on Twitter at Ann Cavoukian, okay? Ann Cavoukian. Find her, find out more too at gpsbydesigncenter.com. And center spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. GPSbydesigncenter.com. Well, we're checking out. Yesterday, I had a great opportunity to speak to Dr. Aaron Cariotti, right? He was on here. We had a wonderful conversation about the biomedical, surveillance community, if you will, and big tech. He cited Dr. Kevorkian's work about Canada tracking its citizens during the COVID 19 pandemic in his new book, The Abnormal. If you missed that conversation, go back and listen to it. It was yesterday, one of those hours. I forget what time he was on, but check it out. Dr. Kevorkian joins me today. Good to have you back, Doctor. Good afternoon.
A pleasure as always, Drew, although it's getting more and more depressing sometimes.
I know. Part of me says, should I even talk about this? I think we need to. I think we got to be vigilant.
We have to talk about it. We have to. Transparency is critical. It is the only way we're going to open up all of these, to me, horrendous activities of governments to try to suppress what people are thinking. They want to control. They want total control. And this is how they do it.
Yeah. I don't know if this is any revelation or surprise to you that, they disengage our, this disinformation board here in the States. The response was overwhelming.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we find out that, big tech is involved with Meta, which owns these major platforms, huge international platforms.
Yes.
And they create a little secret separate portal for the administration to report and determine what is disinformation. I mean, now this is done in a hidden way. Your thought, does that surprise you? I don't know how many other cases this is going on.
It's not that it surprises me, but I want to find it unbelievable that Facebook, Meta, et cetera, is willing to do this, go hand in hand with the government and give them, this content request system that the government will be able to access emails and communications. And they do this via Facebook and gain access to all this information. I mean, and that there's a special portal that enables the government to do that. This is what makes me crazy, is that governments not only have a desire to exert great control over what people are thinking and viewing, et cetera, but they're in bed with Facebook here in terms of gaining access to people's communications, which would enable them to exert greater control. And this term, malinformation, factual information that is usually shared out of context with harmful intent. And who decides if it's harmful? Oh, the government, of course. See, this is the thing. It's the government imposing its views on all of us in terms of our communications.
That's so true. I just wonder, I'm sure someone's going to sue on First Amendment grounds. It's just incredible to me that Facebook has this separate portal for the government and for its employees to report to Facebook what they consider misinformation. I mean, that's troubling to me. It really is. When I discovered that,
it's unbelievable.
I just thought.
It truly is unbelievable.
Because
it's one thing for Homeland Security to be monitoring social media.
Right.
But it's another
that
it's, hand in hand in bed with the social media in terms of Facebook and gaining access to all this information.
Everybody's talking about free and fair elections and everybody should have the right to vote. And I totally agree with that. I'm all for free and fair elections. I think everyone should get out and vote. I think, there should be some accountability as to who votes. You should be able to identify that, like you get on a plane or anything else, for IDs. But to be able now to have a government, whoever's in power, get in bed with social media and determine what you're going to see when you do a search, let's say, for the candidate, right? Or you do a search for the vaccine, or you do a search for any other issue. I mean, I found striking on that list that Afghanistan was on there. Okay, you can see vaccines, you can see the pandemic, you can see Ukraine or racial justice. But Afghanistan was an absolute fiasco. I mean, that was a train wreck. I mean, I don't think it got any worse. How'd they put that on the list? That to me was very telling because these are the things that are important to us. These are the things we want to control what you have access to. Now, the Department of Homeland Security is saying, look, this is necessary. We have to do this because terrorist activity can be, and I quote, exacerbated by misinformation and disinformation that's spread online. So now they're the arbiters of they're your filter. They're not saying to you, look, we respect you enough to make your decision. Is that a sufficient justification for them, Homeland Security, because, you know, terrorist activity?
It's absurd. It's absurd because it's totally tainted by their view of what they consider to be acceptable and not acceptable. And that's what troubles me, that this Disinformation Governance Board that we thought had disappeared, a lot of people are saying it hasn't disappeared. It's just gone under. And it's there's apparently work out there that is revealing that the underlying work of the Disinformation Governance Board is ongoing. And that's the problem, that they want to target what they consider to be inaccurate information. Are you kidding? So what do you think is inaccurate is probably very different from what I think is inaccurate. And that's the problem, is there's so much sway in terms of the control they want to exert on what people are thinking and gaining access to.
Well, my guest, Dr. Ann Cavoukian, if you want to join us, toll free, 888-914-9149. I'll go to the phones in a minute. But there was a great, I just received a, I don't know whether this is a tweet. It was a tweet. A tweet came in from David. Maggie just put it forward to me asking me this. I don't know if this is true. I've never heard this. If it is, it's a little bit troubling. David says, what's your reaction, Dr. Cavoukian, to DuckDuckGo providing information to Microsoft? And for those who don't know, DuckDuckGo is an alternative search engine that's supposed to give you absolute anonymity, supposed to protect your information and your identity. And this person is claiming that DuckDuckGo is now providing information to Microsoft.
And the only reason I'm not going to comment on this is because, honestly, I don't know. I have not. I mean, I use DuckDuckGo. Most people that I do and know that use it, and they, you know, guarantee your anonymity, etc. But if there is a claim that they're giving information to Microsoft, I haven't investigated it, so I don't want to comment on it. Only for that reason.
I've never heard of it, so that's actually a news story for me. I'll look into it. Yeah. That is quite amazing.
Very alarming.
On another note, I mean, I you know, Elon Musk's making a lot of news regarding Twitter. Of course, you've got Facebook, you got Reddit, you got Discord, you got Wikipedia, Microsoft, got LinkedIn, and Verizon. They met on a monthly basis with the FBI, all of those organizations, and other representatives of the government. I don't know if it's still going on. When they were there to discuss how the firms would handle misinformation during the election. Okay, and what we're facing here, the way I look at it, and look, I don't want misinformation either. I don't want to do a search and get something that's not. I want truth, right? But I understand, you know, on one side of the coin here, I'm like, yeah, we absolutely need to make sure that bots and misinformation is not being fed to us, especially dressed up as if though it is truth. On the other side, I do have some concern when you got all these major social media platforms in bed with the government. The government's currently holding power. And what are the guardrails, the safeguards here? Because it looks like collusion between the government and big tech. One party is going to want their party to advance, depending whoever's in power. I mean, I have concern whether it's a Republican in house or a Democrat. So what are the guardrails? How do we safeguard this? How do we safeguard ourselves from getting misinformation, holding the government accountable? We need more transparency. I mean, what do you see?
You know, Drew, it frightens me, honestly, because the U.S. government, of course, has such power, and it uses its power. It's using it to try to shape our online discourse, our exchanges, our information. And they're trying to alter, in my view, what people see as being truthful. You know, they're putting such a spin on things. I mean, everybody has differences of opinion on factual matters, and we all take a different interpretation of it, and that's the beauty of online, that we can all debate this. But if it's being shaped and being sent in a particular direction by the government, and nobody knows that this is happening, the lack of transparency associated with that, this is what should be most troubling, I think, to people, because the control that is being exerted on how we view things and what is truthful and what is not, very frightening.
My guest today, Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and I only have her for a few more moments, but if you want to join us, 888-914-9149. And before I go to the phones, let me indulge myself one final question with you here. And this one is with the Hunter Biden laptop story, right? I mean, that was one in which social media platforms, they stopped it. This is right before a major election, right? It was stopped as misinformation, although at every turn it seemed incredibly credible. It, of course, came out later that it was proven true, and a few organizations that had really muted it did do a mea culpa. They did apologize for that. But it turns out that the FBI agent who told the social media platforms to take the story down is still active right now in policy discussions. And when I read that, I was like, are you kidding me? Obviously, the DHS has no intention of changing its ways. So I just wonder, Doctor, you know, what's the best way for us to protect ourselves? How do we change this as we look forward to the midterms and ultimately to the generals when things really heat up? Is there a filter? Is there something we can – is there a prism to look through that helps us discern what is misinformation, what isn't?
Unfortunately, we just have to remain very very critical and skeptical when we are looking at these communications. There is no silver bullet in terms of how I can direct people to address things. I see things all the time in terms of privacy-related issues that strike me as crazy. And I challenge them because I have some familiarity with the area and I can look under the hood. The problem is most of us with other areas, there's so many areas, we lack the expertise to be able to really be critical and discern what is being truthful or what is false or what is intentionally being misleading. And that's the problem, the biggest problem I have with this, Drew. I think governments intentionally try to mislead people with information, you know, that they favor. And most of us don't have the ability in a dozen different areas to discern what is truthful, what is not. We have to rely on people we trust to look at these issues. But I fear that this is going to continue in terms of the lack of transparency, the misinformation that is directed to us. And now that, as you said, the government's in bed with the tech companies, enormous power in both of these areas.
888-914-9149. We'll go to the phones. Dr. Julie is in St. Paul, Minnesota. She's been listening for a while. Julie, good afternoon.
Here's what bugs me, though. You guys are sitting there talking about Hunter Biden, about this administration, and you have not once brought up all of the misinformation that the last president continues to put out there. And, you know, we are in big trouble in this country when we've got all these deniers who have been able to run for office because of the fact that Trump continues to spew these lies. But Drew, you're always saying that this is a different angle in getting your information, that that you're impartial, but you really aren't, because you have not once brought up that. And this is the big thing that I'm worried about in this election.
Give me an example. Give me an example of the misinformation that's out there right now.
That Trump won last election. I've never heard you once say that he really won that election, he lost that election.
Well, I'll tell you, no, I believe that Trump lost that election. Clearly, a lot of experts have said the same thing. You have to admit, though, Julie, there's been some shadow over the process when election centers counting ballots put up curtains and close viewership. And in the middle of the night, there's one county or one district that is in favor of one candidate. And all of a sudden, an hour or two later, the next morning, it's radically different. Or Paul Watchers being denied. There's a number of sources. I don't remember the exact one. There's been multiples out there. I could open the phones right now. I bet a million people would call in and give you examples of some of the so-called fear of election fraud. I think in the end, you know, that evidence has not been brought forward, so I have not talked about it. I don't know whether that was the case or not. That's why when you asked me, did Trump lose the election, I'm going to say yes. And I think in some parts, you've got to admit, when the election was underway and Joe Biden was campaigning from his basement, right, and he'd hold rallies, just the optics of it for me, looking at it objectively, there's 200 people coming out in their cars and honking horns at a rally. And yet you'd have flotillas and parades and people camping out all night, 5,000 people coming to rallies for Trump. And you see Joe Biden win overwhelming numbers, greater numbers than even Barack Obama, who won the nation over, this incredible orator, right? Just the optics of it cause people to question, how is it possible that a man who had a very dark message and never really campaigned just crushed this other candidate and had more votes than Barack Obama? I don't have an answer for it. I don't have evidence either that there's been any fraud. There are just some questions that are out there. But I, you know, if you ask me outright, I'd say Joe Biden won the election. That's how it shook out.
Okay, but he continues to rally up these lies, and therefore these people are running in these states where there's so much information. And quite honestly, when you say, you know, the rallies, guess what? I voted for Biden, and I never attended a rally. To base it on
I assumed you voted for Biden. I mean, I assume that a lot of people never attended a rally and voted for Joe Biden. He had, what, 80-some million votes? I mean, he had unbelievable. How many votes did he have, Maggie? I forget what the number is offhand. It was significant, to say the least. So there's a lot of people voted for him. I think people wanted his message. I think Donald Trump was a polarizing character. I think clearly he divided people with some of his rhetoric. I have personal problems right now as to where this administration is leading. I don't know who you're going to vote for next time, Julie, if Joe Biden runs again, but he had 81 million votes. Thank you, Maggie. I was off by a million. 81 million votes. I have real problems, and Obama had 69 million votes. Thank you. 81 million for Biden, 69 for Obama. Those are stunning numbers, and you can understand why some people have pause as they sit back and they think, is it possible that Joe Biden was able to rally that many people? Was Donald Trump that hated? Did big tech and social media play a role in the misinformation? What about the media coverage that was out there? A lot of these organizations are propaganda machines for their particular candidates, right? They get out there and they continue with the same mantra over and over again. I'll tell you, I'm going to take a short break. Maggie's saying we're up against the clock. I'll take a short break. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. My guest, Dr. Ann Kavoukian, and we'll take your calls as well. Our conversation continues. You can get in if you want. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. It's not about the party. For me, it's about the ideology. It's about promoting a culture of death. It's about pushing an ideology on your children that is harmful for them and one that attacks both the family. The family is a building block of society, so you're affecting society at large.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Thanks to The Intercept, which just obtained many years of internal documents from DHS, we know that companies like Facebook and Twitter have been working closely with the Biden administration to, quote, curb speech that the administration doesn't approve of. Emails also show that Twitter's top censor, Vijay Gotti, which was fired by Elon Musk, met every month with the Biden administration censors at DHS to talk about new ways to get you to shut up in unconstitutional fashion.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So good to be back here with you today. Just a few minutes left to hang out, and you are welcome to join me at 888-914-9149. That was Tucker Carlson talking about Facebook and Twitter, how they met closely with DHS officials over the past few months, years, to police disinformation. My guest today is Dr. Ann Kavoukian, a great champion of freedom, and she wrote a book. She didn't write a book. She's created a wonderful organization called Global Privacy and Security by Design. I hope she does write a book. She may have. But she joins us today. Have you? What's the name of your book, Doc?
Oh, I've written a couple of them. We'll talk about that next time.
All right. Wait, there's one you want to promote.
It's called Who Knows?
Who Knows? That's a great title.
Yeah,
huh?
Wouldn't you think?
Very curious as to what it's about. I'm assuming.
Okay.
We'll have to get you on.
Privacy,
over there.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And all the information, the surveillance that governments exert on all of us. Yeah. That is one of the biggest problems, that governments exert so much surveillance. They have so much control, and they're in bed with the tech companies now. And that's why, you know, when I wrote the book, Who Knows? Yeah. I mean, it was in jest, but it's real. Who knows what they know? And the problem for me is that there is a formalized process for governments to directly flag content now to Facebook and request that it be suppressed. You know, they make these decisions.
Do you think they have profiles on people? For example, somebody who's running for election, a broadcaster like me, a physician who says, I'm not going to do this surgery.
Oh, for sure. There's no question in my mind
that
there are profiles on us.
Wow, that's fine. All right, well, let's do this. We'll grab a few calls, too, and a few moments left. Ed is listening in Haysport, New Jersey. Ed, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Drew. That was a brilliant response that you gave to Julie.
Thank you.
The only thing that Julie is, her problem is she believes lies because she's thinking that President Trump is lying about what he really did. Yeah. He really got this country, that all our enemies were afraid of us. Everything was going perfect. We had the lowest gas prices ever. Everything was. Now, Julie, I'm sorry, but dear, you believe lies.
Well, Ed, thank you.
But
for
your response was brilliant.
Well, thank you for your passion. I do appreciate it. Look, all I want is truth. You know, if there was some election fraud, I hope it comes to light so the world knows, the country knows what happens, and that's got to be. You know, we are stronger as a republic, and we are stronger and a more perfect union if there is protection of our privacy. If there's transparency when it comes to voting, that there's no election fraud. I mean, we all want that, right? We all want that. And that's what we want. I just want truth. And, you know, our nation today, Doctor, I know you're in Canada. The division in this country is like unlike anything I've ever seen. And I tend to think that the pendulum swinging so far in one direction, it has got to come back to some sanity. It has to. We just cannot continue to go in this direction.
And we have to insist upon it. I always tell people, you never give up. Forget the odds. If the odds appear to be against us, you stand up and you fight back. Yeah. You never give up.
Yeah, no kidding about that. The one final thing here too, just on this whole privacy issue. You and I were talking during the break. If it's not the government that we can hold accountable, is there a way that maybe we can look on the other side of that table and somehow get greater transparency through big tech and hold them accountable to what they're doing? I mean, look, when this next election comes around, I don't want my searches, I don't want some algorithm determining what they're going to feed me, what I'm going to see, right?
Yeah.
I don't want information muted. Let me make the decisions whether this is meritorious or not. How do we do that?
We can move on this. Now, Google is moving because there's been a lot of pressure for lack of privacy on Google. They're now introducing additional measures to protect privacy, which didn't exist before. Apple stands tall, head and shoulders above the rest. They have end-to-end encryption in terms of our emails and things, and they protect our data. So it is possible. We just have to insist upon it and fight for it very broadly, right across the whole spectrum.
Yeah, we talked a lot about different social media platforms. Todd in Lexington's got a question about WhatsApp. I know a lot of people use that. Todd, good afternoon.
Yeah. Hi, Drew. Great program. Listen, well, I use Signal and I use WhatsApp, and I would like to know your thoughts as far as how secure are those? They say that they're both encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
Signal was one that Elon Musk recommended some time back, a year or so ago. And when he recommended it, it was like they were flooded with people requesting, wanting to get on it. And they had to kind of slow down until they could process all of the folks using it. Anyway, that's my question.
Good question. I'm not familiar with Signal, believe it or not.
What did he recommend?
A platform called Signal. I'm not familiar with the person.
I use Signal. Signal is excellent.
I'll have to check it out.
In terms of privacy and data protection, there's no question.
And what about WhatsApp? Some concerns?
I'm not as familiar with it, so I don't want to hazard a guess.
And WhatsApp is I'm not sure. Let me ask Todd. He might have a better sense of this. That's a global messaging platform. Is that based on Facebook? WhatsApp? What's Facebook?
It is on. It's in on. Yeah, it's owned by Meta.
Meta. Okay, Meta. It's
yeah, by right. Meta.
Well, that should give you some concern right there.
They say that it is secure.
That makes me walk away.
Yeah, me too. Secure. I mean, they're giving portals to the government to censor information.
Yeah.
I don't know.
God.
Todd, good question. I'm going to look into Signal. I never heard of it. I don't really use a whole lot of those platforms, but
great.
I should. That sounds great.
Yeah, take a look.
Doctor, thank you. We got to talk about who knows, right? We'll talk more privacy.
Yeah.
Get your book in the hands of some people. I'm very grateful to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Always good to talk with you.
It's always a pleasure, Drew. Thank you very much. That's, take good care.
You too. That's Dr. Ann Cavucchi, and you check out her book. All right. Dr. Cariotti, you know, referenced her in his book, The New Abnormal, but you can check out Ann Cavucchi on Twitter at Ann Cavucchi, or you go to GPSByDesignCenter.com. She'll be back again. We'll certainly talk to her. More calls, or should I talk lottery? Let's talk lottery for a moment, if we could, just because it's $1.5 billion. I just want to put that on your radar. I think I have less than a minute to go. I did not take a winning lottery. I wish I had a winning lottery ticket. I didn't buy a lottery. You can't win if you don't play, right? Isn't that what they say? I'm not going to miss that opportunity. Drawing comes this Friday. They're estimating $1.5 billion. Your chance of winning this thing is ridiculous, though. One in 292 million, so almost one in 300 million. So the odds are no one's going to hit it again. Could we see it creep up to $2 billion? Who wants to be a billionaire? That's the question. Let's talk about it tomorrow. It'll be your last chance to buy your ticket. I'll be back then. Another full show. We got a lot to get into. I'll talk a little more politics tomorrow. We're on the eve of these elections. And we could talk about this attack on democracy and the great threat that faces us. I'll do that in hour one tomorrow. So join me for that, okay? And we'll also take a look at your finances and turning back the clock. We'll pray the chaplet and more.